back, everybody, to the Cranny Command podcast. Today I've got two very special guests. Guests of mine that are on our Discord group and who are actively part of our Man of War community, and that's Chris Snyder. How are you going, Chris?
Good.
Excellent. And Cameron Fletcher, how are you going, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, I'm really glad you guys can come along and chat with me today. And it's going to be all about a game that we really enjoy. It's one of the specialist games at Games Workshop released in 1992. Is that right, Cameron? 92?
Right, yeah, I think so.
Right, 93.
My copyright date says 93
right
on in the book, but I don't know. That could be.
No,
could
I think you're about right, mate. I think you're about right. I think about 93. Sorry, I should have checked that. But you can check out Cameron's YouTube video we talked about in the last episode or two episodes ago, when Cameron just went through the whole history and basically everything about all you need to know about the game on his YouTube channel, which is Kraken's Wave.
Wake.
Kraken's Wake.
Yeah.
Which will be a link in the show notes here in the description of the podcast, so you can go and check that out and learn all about the game. But today, it's our discussion based on the fleets that we like to take and bring to the table of Man of War and why we like to take them. And maybe we'll talk about later about Chris and Cameron's involvement with our Discord remote games too after that. But let's get to the meat of the discussion, guys. Which fleet do you like to take in Man of War and why? Chris, would you like to start?
Oh, of course not. let me give you a little disclaimer right up front. Okay, so though I own everything for Man of War, I'm still only stuck with the base set. I haven't branched out of the base set yet. Part of it is because I like to only play with what I have painted, and that's really all I have painted so far. And I still am really enjoying all of the content in the main base Man of War game. And, you know, for anybody who's interested in getting into the game, you know, unlike some other games, like I wouldn't play Blood Bowl without the Death Zone expansion, and I wouldn't play, you know, 40K without the Dark Millennium. But I think there's enough in Man of War just to keep you going, keep you happy. You don't have to go outside of that if you don't want to. But anyway, having said all that, I've only played the fleets in the main set, and I think my favorite has got to be the Elves. I'm going to pick the Elves. I think that the Elves, similar to Warhammer Fantasy, they are better than everybody at everything. They're like the elite. They excel in movement. They can move better than anyone. They excel in shooting. In close combat, well, that's a different story. They're not good, happy in the boarding phase. They would rather be keeping a distance. And yeah, so just like looking at the ships that make up the Elf fleet, there's only three. The Elf Hawk ship, the Eagle ship, and the Dragon ship. That's the Man of War. And really, the Hawk ships are the only ships of the line. So you're going to get a solitary dragon ship. Your Eagle ships are functioning as independent, or not independent. They're not independents. They're not in a group of three, and the Hawk ships are the only groups of three that you're going to get. Looking at the Hawk ships, they're unique because they have a unique turning template. They can turn on a dime. And the other thing that's unique about, well, all of the Elf ships, the fact that they can move twice. So some sailing ships will have, you know, sail rating, and then they get bonuses if they the wind is with them. The Elves do not get any bonus if the wind is with them, but they can always move twice. Another thing to point out, all of the ships they're all sailing ships. They're all affected by the wind. However, I believe that the Elves are not hindered by that because of the fact that they can move twice. So let's say for some reason you begin your turn and the wind is against you, whether you voluntarily moved into the wind or the wind changed and you find yourself with the wind against you. Because you can move twice, you can spend your first move to get out of the wind, to turn out of the wind, and then move your use your second move to then move normally like a normal ship would. So really, I don't think there's any circumstances where you have to be hamstrung by the wind like other sailing ships are, if that makes sense. The other great thing about Hawk ships, I'm talking about those, the fact that they have two forward-firing weapons. I am a fan of forward-firing weapons because you're going in that direction, you're shooting in that direction. I find forward-firing weapons easier to deal with than broadsides. And the other, of course, big thing that the Elves have going for them, they have a 12-inch range instead of a 9-inch range. I don't even consider it a downside, but there are no saving modifiers for short or long. The downside is you don't get a save modifier at short range. The upside is you don't have a negative modifier at long range, but you don't want to be at long range. I think with the Elves, you want to be at that 9 to 12 inch range as much as you can, so that you can shoot, the enemy ship, and they can't shoot back without moving. Another thing I kind of like about the Hawk ship, even though they are, how do I explain this? Most of the ships of the line have some kind of a range of what they can be hit on. It can be like a 3-4-5-6 or a 4-5-6. In this case, it's a 3-3 up, but they have a an aft castle, which is like a dummy location. It's a location that doesn't actually have any effect if it's hit and you lose it. As far as your sails go, the first hit has no effect, so you have to get hit twice. So that is a downside, is if you get hit that second time and you lose your sails, you are dead in the water. And that's definitely a risk that's there. The fact that they have two weapons and that they're at two different locations is nice, because you have to be hit at least twice to be able to lose your offensive capability. They only have one crew, so that makes them susceptible to some spells that will do an instant, an automatic crew wound. Same way with the below the waterline, they only have one point of that, so they're susceptible to certain spells in that regard. But I classify the Hawk ship as like a glass cannon. It's really going to pack some punch, but if it gets hit too many times, or in one of those crew below the waterline, it's done. Eagle ship, has all the benefits that I mentioned with the movement. It's got some broadsides. It's got some forward firing. I think it's just a good all around ship. Only has three crews. You're probably not going to want to get into any kind of boarding. Both of these ships they're like hit and run. And I like that, because I like playing games where movement and maneuvering is important. I don't like playing armies that just want to go full on to the enemy. I like to kind of dance around a little bit. I was looking at the wrong thing. As far as the shooting goes for the Eagle ship, it has three broadside eagle claws. Now, I didn't mention before, these eagle claws, 12-inch range, but they cannot repel boarders. That's fine. You don't want to be getting boarded anyway, so it's no big deal. So the fact that they have three concentrated shots in one arc, that's really good. Moving twice, they can really do that hit and run. If you can move, get in between two ships, fire six shots both sides, and then move again to get out of the way, that's amazing. Okay, it's the Dragon ship that has two forward firing and one broadside on either side. The thing that makes the Dragon ship unique, it has five crew, which means it's definitely potential for boarding. And it's got this weird Dragon Blade ram, and I kind of have mixed feelings about it because it's not a ram in the sense that you're moving, you come in contact, and then you go right to the, right to the like ram phase. It's not a term, but I'm going to say it's a fake term, ramming and then boarding. Instead, the Dragon Blades function as part of the movement. So if you, during your movement, come in contact with a ship, you like pause, check for below the waterline save, deal damage. And if you're able to sink the ship in the course of that, you can continue on with your movement and, plow through into another one. It sounds awesome, but it's like super risky because if you don't sink that ship, then you're like stuck, you're impaled on that ship. And then, you better hope that you're going to win the boarding action, which with five crew, it's, decent odds if you're going against a smaller ship. But then you have to waste a turn, like scuttling that ship at the end, to try to like get it out of the way. Because it's not like, other ramming actions where, you just kind of hit it and then you can skirt along the side to get away from it. You're like literally impaled on it. But if you can pull it off and sink a ship, it's really awesome. Josh, didn't we play once Elf versus Bretonians? And I think in one move, did I not sink two ships and maybe hit into a third or something like that? It was just really nuts. Do you remember that?
I think I remember it in one of our remote games. Yeah. I think it was the first time I ever took Bretonians as a fleet.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I know that you completely destroyed me in the end. So, but I think it was might have been because of the Dragon Blade, and it could have been because of the broadsides on the Eagle ship. I think you started tearing into me on one flank.
Yeah, but it was the fact that I hit a Bretonian Buccaneer, and they only have one below the waterline damage, so anything's going to sink them. And they only had a five up below the waterline save. So it was a juicy target, and that would work. I wouldn't want to try using Dragon Blades against dwarves because that's just going to not end well.
Oh, well, but saying that, there was a famous game we had with Max. And if Max listens to this, he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. He was kind enough to come up to my place to play Man of War, and we actually recorded it. But unfortunately, I lost all the footage out of us just stupidly deleting it without realizing it. But I took elves, and he took his dwarf. He had his own dwarf fleet, and I rammed his ironclad with the dragon ship, with the dragon blade, and took it out in one hit. So that's how devastating it was against that dwarf. He was just unlucky with his rolls, and I was lucky, getting a six and sinking it in one shot. But potentially very dangerous, and they have because you said you've got five crew, plus if you equip with one of the War Dancer crews on there, you can re-roll your boarding roll dice, which is just insane. So yeah, it's amazing. And the fact
that dragon blade ram is rule of cool. I feel like you gotta try and use it during the game.
Oh, yeah. It's for spectacular when it comes off.
You have to do it.
Because if you do manage to slice through a ship and sink it, you can just keep going. So that's
Yeah.
a wonderful thing. So it can just go straight through the debris and just go out through the other side. So
Yeah,
yeah.
one other thing I just realized about the Dragon Blade that makes it unique is with the Dragon Blade, you can move through wreckage at no cost to your movement.
Yep, that's right.
So that's almost like you can, normally a wreckage or debris is like a, it's almost like a piece of terrain. It blocks line of sight and it blocks movement. So you can like, for you, it's not that. You can, you can pass through it and take that to your advantage. I never realized that until I read it just now.
So it's slices and then just goes straight through it. So yeah, it's a really potential devastating blow if it does get into contact, because it can move twice as well. It's really, really nasty. But the other ships can't ram. So your eagle ships and your hawk ships cannot ram other ships, which is good. They shouldn't be able to, because they can move twice and shoot in their phase. So that makes them very powerful and very, very maneuverable. All right. Okay. Well, Chris, that
Yeah, so
delves
that's
away.
me.
Yeah, good, mate. I'm really glad you chose elves. I think it's a good pick. And we'll have to line up your elves against the Bretonians again at some stage in a remote game to have a rematch, I think.
Sure.
Okay, Cameron, how about you, man? What did you choose?
I just wanted to say what Chris was saying about the elf ships being able to move forward is definitely a big advantage. It's what makes the Imperial Wolf ship such a
Oh, yeah.
good ship. Because I mean, they got three cannons firing forward. Anything that fire that you can fire as you approach your enemy is pretty big advantage. So I get that. My favorite fleet is the orcs, and that's because I think it's because
Crazy.
yeah, they're probably the worst fleet in the game. But when I first discovered Man of War in the local game shop, I remember seeing the box set of Drillakillas and the Hulks, and I was just like, instantly, I was like, knew that I had to get that game, had to get into that game. And so that's why I still love playing the orcs. And I don't, and I think, most of us are all not super competitive. So as long as I'm having fun, I don't mind, not winning the game or whatever. And I still pull off a win every once in a while, not very often, but that, I would say, after the orcs, though, my favorite fleet is probably the Dark Elves. And they were not a fleet that I liked when I initially started playing the game, but I had so much fun painting them that I like putting them on the board now. I think they look cool. They're very different from the other fleets because they're using monsters. And I know the Black Ark is a very tanky ship, but the rest of their ships in the Dark Elf fleet are glass cannons as well, similar to some of the High Elf ships. Both the Death Fortresses and the Doom Reapers have a hit location that if you damage it, they're gone. They're immediately removed from the game. So, but the Black Ark is usually what can swing the game into the Dark Elves' favor. But yeah, the orcs are my favorite. They were the first fleet that I painted, and the first fleet I fielded. I su suffered a devastating loss to some High Elves back in the 90s that I still remember to this day. But yeah, still like them. I haven't actually seen you guys play High Elves in any of the remote games, or I can't remember. Did you do a battle report,
Yeah,
Josh, with
we
the High
did.
Elves?
I'm sure we did, mate. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Paul took the High Elves in that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I should go back and find that one or watch it again, 'cause it's been a long time since I've played them, and it's the only fleet. Even though Man of War is pretty much the main game that I play nowadays, I haven't finished painting all of my fleets, and High Elves are the only fleet from the base game that I haven't finished painting. So I need to get them painted up. But yeah, they were not my favorite fleet because of that beating I took from them when I was playing Orcs that one time, and I guess that's why I put them on the back shelf for so long. I think the High Elves would probably be a pretty good fleet to field a Chaos Fleet, Slaanesh against a Slaanesh Plague Fleet against, because the Slaanesh fleet has those Hell Slicers, and those ships are pretty much useless against a lot of different ships in the game. Like, you can't, I don't think you can even use those against Dwarf Monitors, because the Hell Slicer only hits high locations. So it's great to use against Protonians or High Elves or great ships or something like that, something with sails, and it would be especially good against the High Elves since they move by sail only.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Slaanesh ships, and we're talking about the Plague Fleet expansion that came after the main box of Man of War, which brings the forces of Chaos to the Old World with Skaven, Chaos Dwarves, and then the Plague Fleet and all the four different gods. You can play them within theme or just play a sort of generic Plague Fleet. And in that, they had these wonderful-looking, beautiful-looking design ships for Slaanesh, but they're pretty ordinary compared to Khorne and Nurgle and to Tzeentch. They've got really nice, special-looking and really attractive-looking ships too, but they have really interesting effects and how they play in the game. So some really good, interesting choices. I'm really surprised you chose Orcs, actually, Cameron's, but I actually got to play Orcs with you for the very first time because I really wanted to try them out. So I just remember that one Driller Killer of mine who survived just racing around the ocean there and trying to I think it was trying to catch one of your, I think it was Empire ships you're playing. I think it might've been one of a wool ship or something like that who had the treasure or something. I think that's what we played.
Oh, no, I think we're playing Bretonians. You
oh,
came in
Bretonians
on the rear.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You came in on the rear. I had a treasure on a Corsair and you
that's
swung
right.
the drill kill all the way around and came into this rear where he's got no cannons. So yeah, it works pretty good.
Yeah, because I think they move on a 2d6 or 3d6 or something like that, I think, from memory.
3d6.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So yeah, for the time I played the Orcs, I enjoyed them. I do have some Orc ships that I've never fielded here though, but I just need to finish off my Driller Killers, and I've got the Wyvern Rider, so I've got that to add to the fleet, and I might add some Norse ships or something like that just to bolster up the points, because they are quite cheap, because the big chuckers are absolutely useless because they can't move and shoot, and they have to have line of sight to their enemy ship to shoot at it. So they're just like at this, you know, instant sort of, okay, just chuck them in front because they're going to get shot to pieces, and then we'll follow up with the Driller Killers and our Hulks, because the Hulks are fantastic. I think they're a brilliant
right.
ship.
Yeah, that was something else Chris didn't mention about the High Elves. They've got one of the most powerful flyers in the whole game. It's the High Elf Dragon Rider.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, those are great. Setting ships on fire like nobody's business.
So that came in, the flyers and everything came in as the Sea of Blood expansion, which was the final expansion box set that came out for Man of War. So that, introduced the flyers. It introduced monsters to the game. We haven't really discussed those. We should really do like a Sea of Blood kind of show, I think. I think it deserves an entire show, plus Plague Fleet. We haven't really covered that either. Because they're both excellent expansions. They change the game quite dramatically in some respects. I think they try to break the game in some respects.
Yeah.
I think Chris just playing out of the box, the original box, is a really good way to go, because I find that all the fleets are really well balanced. They all have their unique racial traits inbuilt into the fleets. The other expansions do that as well. And Chaos is a really flavorsome fleet, and I really love playing Chaos. I almost chose it as my favorite fleet, but I'm going to go with my Dwarves, because they were the first things I latched my eyes onto. And I actually bought a painted fleet from Richard Gunson, my store manager in the UK at the time when I was working there. And I played it on the floor of the room I was staying in. I was renting a room from a guy who was a customer at the store there at the Oxford Plaza. And I had to move out of my then accommodations, and then he allowed me to stay with him, and then he showed me how to play Man of War, and I played with that fleet for only one time in the 90s, and then later sold it before I came back to Australia. So yeah, they're my sort of love, I think, first love, and Yeah, I think they work very differently from any other fleet. They are just like dwarves. They're fully encased within these steam-powered engined vessels, which are impenetrable. So if you want to board them, you can't unless they take damage, which is great. They've got a lot of turrets on them, which means they can swivel around because the general firing procedure for ships with cannons on their broadsides or front and rears of the ships, you've got to place a template directly in the direction they're facing. But with dwarves, they have a lot of ships with, like, the monitors and the Nautiluses have, and the dreadnoughts and the ironclads have turrets, which means you can fire in 360, sometimes mostly in 360 degrees, especially for the Nautilus, for example. And the monitors is a good example for that. The dreadnought, which was released as part of the Sea of Blood expansion, that is now your main Man of War ship. You've got the one of, you have to take one of those. Before in the base set, it's the Ironclad that was your main Man of War, which is an excellent ship. I love taking those as independents. And the Dreadnought is just, the name says it all. I mean, it's everything that's on the box. It's a big, big bloody ship. It takes loads of damage. Only has four crew, sadly. I wish it had five, like the Hulk, because the Orc Hulk's got five crew. I don't know why we got four. We don't have any special crew we can take, unfortunately. So we just got our dwarf sailors. But what the dwarves do have, which I really love, they have engineers, and there's an engineer in every single ship. So when you take damage in the game in Man of War, the engineer can scuttle around and try to fix it in the end phase. And you roll the dice, and if you roll a five or six, you can choose one location that can repair that one location, which is a completely unique thing because no other fleet has it unless you have a spell and a magician that can allow you to do that in the game. So that's really cool. And they've got a runesmith. So they can't use magic, but they at least get that sort of instant dispel because magic works very differently than, regular Warhammer. So you don't have dispel cards as such. You have magic cards which can counter certain types of College of Magic, but usually if you don't have that, you've got no way of stopping it. So the dwarves have a natural dispel of six on a d6, which is very handy. And they move under steam, so they don't care about the wind. I don't care if the wind's facing towards me or, directly into my ships. We don't care. We just keep, steaming and sailing straight through it. We can spin on the spot. We can turn 90 for half, 180 for full. We can move backwards. We can ram a lot of your ships apart from the little Nautilus. And talk about the Nautilus, it's one of the coolest things about the entire thing about Man of War because it can actually dive like a submarine. It can fully submerge underwater. It can go, totally silent, like in this, I don't know, what do you call it? Sort of, I don't know, seafare espionage, and then release its torpedo. And then that's the coolest thing because it's got a separate template. You've got to roll a dice to see which direction that the torpedo goes. I don't know why it just can't fire the way you want it to, but it's all random. And that's the thing about Man of War, it's a very random game. So if you like random fun, and like Cameron said, if you're not in a competitive mindset, you're going to love Man of War for what it is. Would you guys agree?
Dwarfs are a fine fleet. I often say that I think the dwarfs and the Empire are probably the two best fleets in the game, just because of their utility. They've got so many options in terms of their movement and firing. I'd say that maybe Nurgle might be the most powerful fleet in the game, but or the hardest to beat fleet in the game, but Empire and Dwarfs, those are both fine fleets.
Yeah, especially I played a lot of remote games with Marcel in Germany there when he played Nurgle as a fleet, and I played Empire, and I loved Empire because of the wolf ships. The wolf ships are just like the best, and that's why it was a difficult choice for me, either Dwarves, Chaos, or Empire, because they're sort of my go-tos whenever I get to play Man of War. And the wolf ships are just devastating. Once you've got like potentially nine shots raining down on you from those three ships, my goodness, they just tear you to pieces. Nurgle's a really interesting one as well, especially that Nurgle's rot counter you put on the crew, and you can really ruin someone's day with that just, constantly being there and killing off your crew one by one. So that's really interesting as well. So yeah, each fleet has something really cool about it. And we should go and cover more of the fleets, maybe more detail in future episodes. So that's really good. I think we're going to take a quick break, guys, now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the remote games you guys have been playing on our Discord and hopefully encourage more people to come and give it a go. So we'll come back in just a moment.
Okay.
All right, well, okay, so welcome back, guys. So now we can talk a little bit about the remote games you guys have been playing on the Discord. And have you been playing anything, any games recently? Chris, have you been playing any games recently?
Oh, my gosh, I did. And I can't remember
played me.
Who I played with. Or what. Did I play you?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
That's right. It was you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played Bretonians because I'm still trying to figure out how to play them.
Yeah.
And you played the dwarves, of course. Oh, and we played the treasure fleet scenario.
That's right.
And I somehow won.
Yeah, because
I think I won.
Yeah, because you, but, you had your treasure chests on the smallest ships in the fleet. I forget what they're called now.
They're Buccaneers.
Buccaneers.
Yeah. Buccaneers. That's right. And I stupidly didn't put enough ships on that flank to screen that.
Yeah. And I just ran.
And then at some point I thought, it'd be okay because I took out two of your ships already on that flank with the Nautilus and the Ironclad moving up there. And I thought, okay, I've got it covered. But then, that's the beauty of Man of War. Things change. And when you think, oh, my luck's down, I think your luck was not that good or something or whatever. You made a lot of saving throws or something like that.
I made an incredible
every single time I shot you. You made that saving throw. It was incredible.
I don't think I took a single bit of damage on any of those Corsairs, which is nuts. They were getting hit all over the place.
Yeah, the Corsairs were just ran through the other flank.
Yeah.
They just steamrolled everything. So it was luck, bit of bad luck on my part, maybe, and good luck on my part as well in some cases. So it was really fun. It sort of swung back and forth, and then managed to get that little Buccaneer off my table edge and get the extra points.
Now, I do have a little an addendum to that that battle report. And I don't want to go off the topic, but Cam, have you, or Josh, have you heard any errata in the game regarding the dwarf monitor? Because I've been noticing, there's every ship has a battle honor associated with it. So if you sink, or scuttle,
I know what you're talking
about. So the battle honors are typically, it's 1 point for every 25 points that the ship is worth. So like a squadron of ships of the line that cost 150, that's 50 points per ship. That means that it should be worth 2 battle honors. But for some reason, the dwarf monitors are worth 3 battle honors. And I don't know if that's a typo or what. It's the only ship that's like that I've come across. And I don't know if that's intentional or if that's, but anyway, if it is supposed to be 2, that game would have been closer than than it came out to be.
Oh,
so
definitely a typo then. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write on mine right away. I'm gonna write a 2 on there, not a 3. I'm gonna cross out for a 2. Easy. Fixed.
I'll have to look into the Esoteric Order of Gamers, like their sheets, and see if it's a 2 or a 3 on that. I'm just throwing that out there. Okay. I'm sorry.
Contact Games Workshop. You send them a letter. Eastwood.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a
Andy Jones.
They answered some measure of this question in one of the Q&As. Somebody wrote in and asked because they had noticed that the battle honors were different than the points system that you're talking about.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, in the Q&A, they say, to go by the listed battle honors, not by the points. That you were just going to, you could just use the points if you didn't know what the battle honors
were. Right.
But that was like a backup way of determining your battle honors, basically.
Okay.
But I'll find it put it up in the Discord.
Yeah. Well, okay.
That's
good,
mate. That's great. You mentioned that and brought that up because now every dwarf player has that assurance now that their monitors are worth two battle honors, not three. So that's a good point. That's a good point to make. Yeah, just go by the points, not by what it says on the card, because sometimes that can be a mistake, as Chris has pointed out. All right. So, okay, so you had a game against me. Now that was dwarves against the Bretonians and with Treasure Fleet. Any other games at all, mate, before that? Can you remember?
Oh, I played a bunch. Not incredibly recently. I feel like I kind of have the it's a mixed bag, really. It's good because I get to often play with newcomers, people who are interested in learning how to play the game.
Yeah.
And I like that. I mean, I have a lot of fun teaching the game and introducing it to people. The downside is I feel like I've played like a vanilla game so many times. And the game that you and I played, that, you know, the Treasure Fleet, was maybe one of the only or few scenarios that I've played in recent memory. So it's nice. I really like playing the scenarios. And as much as I like, playing a vanilla game with new people, I really like to try diving in more to scenarios and even maybe coming up with my own scenarios. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, why not?
Although I did play, one of the scenarios I remember I did play was the Treasure Island? Is that what it's called? Where you, Buried Gold, I think. Buried Gold is what it's called. Right. Yeah. Right. That's really interesting too, because you land one of your ships on the island, unload some crew.
That's right.
And depending on what fleet you're running, I mean, that can make a huge difference. I think I played that with some Dark Elves, which was, I think, perfect, because the only fleet, or the only ship that has crew in that case, is the Black Ark.
I was going to say, and monsters don't have any crew. They only got wounds.
No, no. Yeah. So it could just, you know, move up to the island and dump off some crew and try. And it's a pretty defensive ship, so it really doesn't have to worry about, you know. No, but like, if I were playing something like the Elves, for example, those Hawk ships only have one crew, so, you know, that would be pretty dangerous to do. But I did like that that scenario a lot too.
Yes,
that's my favorite scenario out of the base.
Right. Yeah,
very cool. That one. Yeah.
There are some other ones where you have to, you start off with half the points of the other fleet. Like there's a kind of like a, you know, imbalanced thing, but, you know, you're defending or, you know, you're attacking or something like that in certain scenarios. I've never played those. I've only played the Treasure Hunt, I think the first two ones, where one's kind of like you're sort of after a storm, after the storm, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Where your ships are displaced and your opponent gets to place them in your deployment zone in any direction. And the other one where you have all the terrain pieces, I think you'd have at least three in each sector or each quadrant or four or whatever. That's quite cool as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of good scenarios in there. And also with the Plague Fleet, they've got actual special chaos terrain. Yeah, that can actually affect the seascape. So I think there's one that me and Paul played where it's like there's a sea of chaos and you enter it and you've got to roll a dice to see what happens to your crew and that kind of thing to your ship. I think maybe by magic he managed to pull me into there and I had to roll to see what happened. And that was really cool too. So yeah, it's got lots of potential in there. And we haven't, even though we've been playing for quite a while, we haven't explored everything about Manowar, which is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's six scenarios in the base game, six scenarios in Plague Fleet.
That's right. Yep, exactly. And I should mention too, just before we go into Cameron and ask him about his remote games, you both have been on Matthew's Bedroom Battlefields podcast talking to him about Man of War and about remote gaming. So just a shout out to him and his podcast for people to go and listen to those if they haven't listened to them yet. And yeah, you guys talk in detail about that with Matthew, which has been really enjoyable to listen to. But Cameron, have you been playing any remote games recently, mate?
The last game I played was with Mark from Bedroom Battlefields. He's real active over there on that Discord. I think it was his first game in a while, but he's played it before, and he was super quick on pulling up or remembering the rules. And so it wasn't really like playing with, I didn't do much teaching with him. He was on top of the rules right away. I think he must have studied up or something. I don't know, but he was definitely all over it. And we played Bretonians. He played Bretonians. I played the Orcs, and it was just a straight up game. And I get what Chris is saying about playing those straight up battle games where there's no scenario. After a while, it gets, you know, you kind of want to play a scenario for a change. It's just, I think some of the scenarios are better suited if you have a player that is trying to learn the rules as opposed to others. Like the Treasure Fleet scenario is a pretty good one. I think if you got somebody that's a beginner and still needs to, you know, be taught some of the rules, I think that's a doable scenario. And so is probably After the Storm. But like the scenario, I don't think I would try Buried Gold with somebody that was first, it was like their first experience with the game. And I would try the Shore Fort scenario. Those Shore Forts are, I think, if I'm not mistaken, one of the objectives in that game is to destroy the Shore Fort, and that thing is bloody impossible to damage. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it has a 3-up save, so it's
yeah. I did it once with Paul, and I played against his Chaos Dwarf fleet, against my Dwarf fleet. Well, I never got to see his Shore Fort. I mean, he obliterated me before I even got anywhere close to it. So, with this Chaos Dwarf fleet, which is another topic for another day, I think. if you've ever faced a Chaos Dwarf fleet, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, but they're quite unique in how they play as well, with their barrage template weapons and that kind of thing. Chris got to find out all about them today, didn't you, mate, when you opened up your box set?
Yeah, it's the first time I looked at them. Can you believe that? I've had this game how long, and I'm for the first time I'm looking at Chaos Dwarfs, yeah?
Yeah, so they're really cool as well. So there's everything, yeah, you cater for everything in the game. And also, something we haven't really touched on is campaigns. Now, there are campaign rules in the base set which allow your crews to gain experience over time having survived linked battles. So, for example, if, you know, and me and Paul have been playing those, and we've done some of those for our channel at Chronicum and Games, where we played a few games as campaigns. And we've got a record. You've got a record sheet that's on the back of the rule book. You just photocopy that, and you can write all your details of your ships. And then as you survive each game and accrue battle honors, you can assign that to upgrading your crews to like veteran status and above that. So I think there's about 4 or 5 different levels they can go up to. And the further you go up in experience, the better they are at shooting, or they can shoot twice and things like that. So, but if you lose your ship and your crew during the game, it's gone. Their experience is lost and the sailors drown. But so there is campaigns. There's a nice little, you know, another way you can play Man of War and have linked games using the scenarios as well, or the ones you create yourself. So it does have a bit of longevity to it. You know, it's not just a standalone game. Have you guys experienced campaigns at all, Cameron?
We played a campaign once back in the 90s. I haven't played them since. But we did notice that, you know, a lot of the games are pretty bloody. You lose a lot of ships during a game. So it's pretty difficult to build up a seasoned crew. And it's really just it happens over the course of a campaign, but it's mostly just a matter of luck, like what ship is going to be lucky enough to not get sunk or destroyed or abandoned or whatever. And it does add a little bit more fear, I guess, in the admirals, in terms of trying to keep your ship safe. You're probably a little bit more likely to withdraw in a campaign game if you think you can get away and keep your ships alive to, you know, to advance those crews a little bit further.
I think there's a very special quote in here about that, about fleeing in during a campaign. It's very funny. It sounds like something that Nigel Stillman wrote or something, I'd say. Where was it again? I'll just try to find it. But it says something like, if...
It sounds like somebody floated the idea of doing this.
Yeah, any player who sails his fleet directly off the table without firing a shot and no intention of fighting the enemy or achieving the scenario objective is obviously a lily-livered coward. There you go. So, yeah, it has a rule inbuilt in the game that if you do that, then, you know, you're going to suffer some consequences for just, you know, scampering off and not fighting the game, which is really cool. Obviously, it has been done before when they play tested in the studio when they were developing the game, maybe. So, yeah, it's a really good game. I'm really glad we've discovered it and, you know, either from the 90s or recently, and we're playing it. We were throwing the idea about doing an online campaign. I think we should really start thinking about doing that because it's a case of we don't really get a chance to play Man of War all the time. We're doing it on Discord anyway. We should just make it a campaign so that we can we have enough fleets amongst us all that we could do that easily. And yeah, we should definitely get that to the table soon, guys. So I really appreciate you guys coming on and talking to me about it. I hope we get more people interested in Man of War and giving it a go. So guys, if someone out there on the podcast wants to contact you about getting a demo, how would they do that? Chris?
I guess just find me on Discord and send me a message and say, when can we play? And we'll set something up. Readily available.
Okay. And Cam, same for you, mate. They can contact you through Discord then?
Yeah, Discord's probably the easiest. If for some reason somebody's listening to this podcast and doesn't have Discord or hasn't, you know, downloaded it or whatever, they can find my YouTube channel also. It's like you mentioned, Kraken's Wake, and just comment on in there. And I've only got one video up, so just comment in there, and I'll get in contact with you. Or on the Facebook, the Man of War Facebook page, be another good spot. Shout out and. Yeah, we'll get you a remote game in.
Excellent. Okay, so I'll leave your Discord usernames in the show notes for this episode, and of course the Discord link so people can go there. Discord's a great place for doing remote games. You can watch remote games. You can, you know, you're part of a community that has not just Man of War, but you know, several other titles there. To engage with other hobbyists with around the world, which is a really cool place to be. So hopefully you can join us there and get into discussions with Man of War and start playing some demo games. So until then, guys, look, thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate your time today and enjoy your evenings.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.